that pushes justice and equality in housing and in every other sector of American society.
I agree. Direct action is definitely needed, and we're going to need people to get up and stand up and take, like you said, take active action and knock on people's doors and get on the ground. So we've been speaking with Laura Gottesteiner, the author of A Dream Foreclosed, Black America and the Fight for a Place to Call Home. Her new article, The Empire Strikes Back, How Wall Street Has Turned Housing into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again, can be found on the website tomdispatch.com. Laura, thank you so much for taking your time to speak with us and give us more information about the foreclosure and letting folks know that what they're hearing in popular media is not true. We are still in a crisis.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Have a wonderful evening.
You as well.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO. Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.
Recovery Zone 11 to noon this Wednesday to find out how our food choices may be affecting the environment, our health, and our relationships with one another.
If we really are serious about wanting to have peace on this planet, we have to look at the ramifications of our food choices. We're not some kind of species that is fundamentally flawed. We're always going to have domination and war and so forth. We're born into a culture essentially with an obsolete food orientation. The beauty of the message is that we absolutely can transform our culture.
Learn more from Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, on the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland this Wednesday, November 27th from 11 to noon. Your turkey day could well never be the same.
Tune in Wednesday at 9 a.m. for a special political perspectives show. Teresa Mitchell will interview Michael Kimmel, author of Angry White Men, American Masculinity at the End of an Era. Hear about Michael Kimmel's research interviewing a variety of angry white men, from white supremacists to men's rights activists to schoolboys, to try to figure out what makes them so furious. That's Wednesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
To another episode of Tune In, Turn On, Remember, 45 years of KBOO history. I'm Dan Johnson. My guests tonight have over 50 years combined experience with the KBOO family. Kathleen Stevenson began her volunteer work with KBOO in 1985. Over the years, she has held a number of different responsibilities until she became our AM News and Public Affairs Director, a job she still holds. Bruce Silverman began volunteering in the news department in 1991, and like Kathleen, Bruce has worn a number of hats. He is currently KBOO's facilities manager and is also the station archivist. We're going to talk about their work and lots of other things. So, just sit back, relax, and get ready to tune in, turn on, and remember, 45 years of KBOO history. The journey continues next, right here on KBOO. Well, here we are, and this is something that I've hoped for a long time. You know, usually a kid wants a Schwinn bike for birthday or Christmas, but I have the pleasure of having Kathleen Stevenson and Bruce Silverman in the studio, and we're recording this, but it's only because the schedule that both of these people have, we had to do this way. And so I want to say a great big thank you to both of you for taking the time out of your schedules. I don't know if you have really put a calculator to this, but the two of you combined have over 50 years experience with KBOO.
Wow.
So, you know.
Good to know. Dan.
And I think Bruce just grew a few more gray hairs. But no, and so in that context, we want to get started. Kathleen, I want to start with you.
Okay.
One of the curiosities that I've really wanted to find out about is 1985, you wake up one morning and you say, oh, I think I'm going to go volunteer at KBOO today.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
I actually didn't come down to volunteer the first time I thought about it. I called to find out, and they had just had an orientation, it seemed. So the person said, we don't have one for another month or two. And I said, oh, I'd really like to get started right away. And she said, well, I'll have, I think she said she would have the program director, who was David Lifton. I think she said she'd have him call me back. But it turned out that Ross Reynolds, who was the news and public affairs director, called me back. And he did need people in the news department at that time. So he arranged for me to come down and do some training with him right away. And that's why I never attended a volunteer orientation, secrets
still
be known.
Haven't, huh? All right, Ani, take note of that. So the training that you received, did you have some sort of news background or journalism background prior to that?
None at all. At the time, I was working in my apartment by myself doing graphic design, I guess you could say, mostly illustration, and mostly for one state agency that I had worked for a number of years. So I was feeling kind of isolated in that way, and I listened to KBOO a lot of the time that I was working. I also was
doing painting on the side just for my own enjoyment. And so I really wanted something where I was interacting with people, and KABU was perfect. And the news, the KABU news was perfect for that because you worked in little teams. And so that's how I ended up doing that.
Cool. Bruce, let's go to you. 1991, fast forward from 1985. I'm not going to ask you about the Portland Trailblazers. We've already talked about that. But how did you happen to stumble onto KABU?
Well, I stumbled on listening to the radio one night, actually some years after I came to Portland. I had not listened to community radio before. And just going around the dial, and actually I stopped when I heard John Talley's voice on Indian World. And I think it was just his voice that got to me. But I started listening to that once a week. But in the late 80s, until 1991, I was a traveling salesman, and I wasn't home much and couldn't do any volunteering. But in 91, I stopped doing that. And by then, I was listening a little bit to KABU. And I've always watched and listened to the news from the youngest age. We watched half-hour evening news and local news on TV at home where I grew up, not in Portland, and read the daily newspaper. And when I was a teenager, our daily newspaper in the suburbs of Long Island was edited by Bill Moyers. Hmm. It was a good paper. So I learned a little bit about journalism without actually studying it. In 1991, when I had more time available, I came to KABU one day and said to the receptionist, I think I want to do something with the news. I was not able to be any more specific than that. But our volunteer coordinator at the time, Beth Hyams, who's now at Oregon Public Broadcasting but was here first, took me to the news director in the newsroom. It was Eugene Rashad, who is still here at KABU doing a music show. And he and a very steady volunteer in the news department named Chris Nielsen, who was also a member of the Old Mole Collective, took me into a production room. They had a piece of tape which had a pre-recorded news report, and I was asked to write a one or two sentence intro to this news report. Now, I had never heard the word intro, but I understood what it must be, and I had heard intros as a consumer. And they showed me, this was old-fashioned reel-to-reel tape. They put it on the tape machine, showed me play and rewind and so on, and left me alone for a little while. I wrote an intro, handed it back to Chris, and within an hour, I heard words that I had written on the radio.
Isn't that amazing?
I was hooked, and I came back next week, same time, same place. And before long, I was switching off with Chris Nielsen. And then he left, and I became editor of the evening news one and sometimes two evenings a week. And it was a feeling of great power and responsibility.
Now I know that, Kathleen, you and I talked a little bit about this before. There was a distinction between editor and producer. And so you were an editor, and at one point, going back in time, you were an editor and producer, right?
Yeah, it's different. It was differently organized or named at that time. The editor was the person who was sort of responsible for the whole newscast when I started, and producer was someone who did the kind of things that Bruce was talking about, either cutting tape or editing tape. But the editor, and Chris Nielsen was also one of my editors that I worked with when I first came in. He was quite the taskmaster and actually was quite good in that sense. But he was an editor, and then later I became an editor and sort of oversaw exactly what was happening during the newscast.
And in doing that, did you help ensure the content of the news was properly written, or was that not a part of the function?
Oh, yeah. That was you tried to proofread things that had been written by people, especially people who were new.
Yeah.
One thing the editor did back then and well into the 90s, we were members of the Associated Press and could use any stories that they published. They had their own wire, as it's called. We actually received it by satellite after a while. And the editor, as Kabu called it, selected stories out of the hundreds that were published every 24 hours, selected them, and we eventually got the newspaper version, which is long stories, as originally written by reporters in the field. And they were written in newspaper language, which is different from radio language. So the idea was to choose the stories and then rewrite them for our own anchors to read on the air.
So, but you still had to have the news ready by 5 o'clock? And
supposed to be done 30 minutes before the air time and hand the printed out, typed out copy to the anchors, go over with them pronunciations and that kind of thing. I did not meet the 30-minute deadline for at least my first 6 months. I know that. And the pronunciation issues did not get resolved always.
Well, sometimes I think they still have those difficulties, but that's just the nature of things. And, of course, where we are in the world now and trying to pronounce names that we otherwise may never have heard in our lifetime could be a challenge at most. Now, Kathleen, I want to talk a little bit about your rise in your career, if you will. you eventually became the AM News and Public Affairs Director. How did that come about?
Well, I'll try to condense this. I had a variety of jobs that were sort of variations on the job that I have now, which is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. But I was a volunteer for a couple years. Ross Reynolds, who was my supervisor, who was the News and Public Affairs Director at the time, he got a job in Seattle. I think he's still there at KUOW. So he needed to move right away with very little notice, and they needed an interim person. They divided his job into two, and I had one part of that. I had the news part of that because I was – by that time, I was a news volunteer that was here a lot, and I knew a lot of the mechanics of doing the newscast. And they gave the other part of the job to a fellow named Michael Cannarella, who'd had the public affairs arena. We did that. Actually, then Michael was replaced by somebody else because he got another job. But that was split like that for about 8-9 months, maybe a little longer. And then they decided to put the jobs back together into one job and hire somebody. And I got that job, which was news and public affairs. I did them both for about 4 years before they split the jobs into news and public affairs. And I did that for a while. We then recombined them in a way, we split them in a different way by time of day because it had been too difficult for one person to do news at in the morning and news in the evening. So, and that when they split them again, then I became the AM News and Public Affairs Director. And that's been, actually, I don't know how many years that's been. It's been quite a few years.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, with the advent of our morning newscast, it was impossible for one member of the paid staff to oversee. Kathleen was coming in at, I think, 4:30 a.m. to oversee the morning news. And the evening newscast person had to be here until 6 p.m. So it was, as she said, split in a different way.
Made for a long day.
For the news, for anybody, because the public affairs was spread out all over the time period. You couldn't really supervise something that was on at 8 at night and something that was on at 7 in the morning.
You don't stretch that way, you know. It just doesn't work. So, okay, everything evolves into the form of programming that we're doing. You started off in the morning with the news, and then you went into public affairs programming?
Right.
Okay. What are some of the programs that were on the air at that time that are still on the air today?
When I first started?
News and Public Affairs Director.
Okay. Well, at that time we had something called the Radio Zine, which was sort of a longer formatted way of doing public affairs than we have now. It was something that Ross Reynolds developed, which was 2 hours, 4 days a week. And they had a host that was sort of the person who was on the air the whole time presenting different segments of the radio zine. There are little parts of that program that are still with us, but the that overall way of presenting information has kind of been divvied up and divided among lots of different programs more than it was at that time. For instance, the stage and studio program was a theater show that was part of one of those quote-unquote radio zines with one host that oversaw the whole 2 hours in the morning. That's now just a separate program, and it's still with us. It's named something different, but it's still there. Other things that might still be with us in their same form, the Art Focus program is still with us. It's on a different day. It's hosted by a different person or different people, but it's still with us, although slightly changed.
Right. Now, something that I've heard some people ask, and I ain't smart enough to answer it. That's why I have you two people here.
Right.
How does a program get selected to be added to the list?
A public affairs program?
Yeah.
Well, right now, there is an opening for a public affairs program. It is posted on one of the bulletin boards. I sent it out to the list of people in my department, and my coworkers have sent it out to the lists in their departments. So we will take a look at what comes in from that posting, what proposals are accumulated for that. And then at some point, the program committee will have some input into that. So it would be a combination of the various directors and the program committee who will provide input, and hopefully something new will get on the air.
Any ideas to when you want this program to kick off and the structure of the program?
Well, it's to fill a slot that was a political program. It was the slot that was Voices of the Middle East. It alternates with programs that are mostly political in nature. It's in a strip that we call political perspective, so we want the program to have a focus of some kind of political aspect. And structure could be a lot of different things. Kicking off will depend on when we get some people who want to do some pilots. It's open right now until the end of the year.
Okay. It's the same thing with music programming. Sometimes the relevant staff and the programming committee will decide they want to replace a departing host with the same type of show, same genre of music, in public affairs, same subject or broadly. And sometimes they decide to just see what proposals come in and then make a decision.
Right, right. Now, as a matter of fact, Bruce, you remember that stack of reel-to-reels that I had in my hand the other day and I went into the production room?
Old programs, yes.
Yeah, that's the one. I found a tape from 1988 that Bill Resnick did. And we're going to listen to it right now. So,
at the Jobs with Justice rally, one of the speakers told a tragic story. Rural Pennsylvania, paper factory. On strike a week, the company hired a full workforce of scabs. One late Friday afternoon, months into the strike, after work, scabs made their exit. Picketers asked them to join the strike, called them scabs, spit at them. Scabs yelled back, "We're not scabs, we're permanent, and you're out of work." Then they waved their paychecks. One 26-year-old striker, who had every day picketed, every day stopped deliveries, harassed the scabs, joked with his friends. That night he drove his truck up the mountain and killed himself. How could it happen? So much despair. So many people ready to take the jobs of others, then rub it in. So little hope. So little solidarity. Scabbing is nothing new. In the U.S., employers have never had much trouble finding impoverished and desperate people ready to take a job, any job. Always the latest immigrants, the poorest, the most oppressed. What have other workers done for them? Moments of working class solidarity, when workers wouldn't be caught dead breaking a strike. They've been few and far between. But it's happened. In some periods, in some struggles, workers have come to see their common interests, come to feel in their bones the truth of the old labor slogans. An injury to one is an injury to all. If we don't hang together, we'll hang one at a time. Could solidarity break out again in the late 20th century? Perhaps. We have some advantages. Differences of race, sex, ethnic origin have declined. We speak a common language. We can talk together. And most people know the rich and corporations take unfair advantage. There's lots of animosity and little love for the U.S. elite. But feelings of solidarity in U.S. workers? That will be a while. When we come to share a vision of a better society, workers self-managed, radically democratic, celebrating the dignity of work, dedicated to preserving the natural environment, doing right by the humblest among us. Yes, it's possible. We deserve it. We can bring it into being. A labor movement that speaks this vision, that expresses this certainty, that fights for short-term interests, and this general interest, it will happen too in time. Then few would imagine scabbing, and 26-year-old men would not despair, but fight harder and keep going. This is Bill Resnick for Radio Zine.
That was 1988, and a little bit of poetry. And to our listeners, you are tuned in, turning on to KBOO's Great History. For 45 years, I have Kathleen Stevenson and Bruce Silverman in the studio, and we're talking about those things that have transpired in the past, and we're looking forward to the future as well. Bruce, I want to talk a little bit with you about your responsibilities here at the station. You've worn a number of hats, and you are currently the facilities manager as well as being the station archivist.
Yeah, my roles have changed a lot. As I mentioned earlier, I started as a news editor. I've never been an anchor, never been a reporter. I didn't choose to, and as a volunteer, neither Kathleen nor anyone else can make me. But there was a time when I was still working in news, and I learned that in a back room of the KBOO building, there were about 3,000 old reels of tape and some cassette tapes. This was right around 2000. They were stuffed into shelves every which way, and there was no catalog of these old programs that we had recorded and saved. And I saw Kathleen struggling to find an old program one day from a heap on the floor, literally. And luckily, she has a great spatial memory, and she remembered where she put it months or even years before, and it wound up on the air. But I thought this was not a good situation, and we weren't making good use of what we had done in the past. Another volunteer provided a blank copy of a database, and I spent about 6 months entering the basic descriptions and dates and so on of these old programs into a computer. In the intervening years, we've added about 4,000 more recordings. And of course, as of 2012, all the public affairs programs are going straight onto the internet. But the old ones, yes, I became the archivist. And when Kathleen or another programmer decides something is so good that we should save it so we can play it again, I enter it into the database and put it in that little room. We're hoping to soon get a grant to cover the costs of digitizing all those recordings so that anyone, a cable listener or anyone actually with a computer anywhere in the world, can type in a keyword, a subject, or the name of a guest, an author, and hear a KBOO interview with them. I also, yes, I'm the building manager because my day job is to manage a small apartment building. And here at KBOO, the station engineer was in charge of fixing the toilets and painting the walls and thought that was beneath him. And also the 25 or more computers we have. And so I was asked to do that. And it was a paid job for a while, minimal pay, and now it's a volunteer job.
So here we are, 2013, and if we want to find a reel-to-reel from 1978, music from the True Vine, we can go back through the archives and possibly find something?
Well, you won't find music programs due to a few, but generally you won't because of licensing and copyright issues. But a public affairs program, whoever Bill Resnick might have interviewed back then, for example, or Kathleen, you cannot go to the KBOO website at this time as we're speaking. But if you really want to get a copy of that or want to encourage Kathleen to play it on the morning public affairs time, you can call the station and say, Kathleen, I heard a great interview with whoever back then or an interview on a certain topic, and I can't remember the name. And if we saved it, we can probably find it. I should say that for the first 30 years of broadcasting, 1968 to 98, we only saved an average of 100 programs per year, even though we're on the air 168 hours per week. Tape was expensive, and we erased and reused it, frankly.
And one of the difficulties we experience now is when we go back and pull out one of these reel-to-reels, the audio quality is often terribly damaged. I mean, we sometimes not fit for rebroadcast, but oftentimes, I mean, like this one with Bill Resnick, I think that you'll find it, you know, was came out pretty good. You know,
it varies.
Yeah, it does vary.
Yeah, and the tape that we used at the time really varied. We did buy tape, but we also used a lot of recycled tape that we got from a variety of sources, including we used some tape that was we referred to as Moscow tape that was from Russia and was really it had a certain a distinct look to it. It was odder than the other tape. It had white on one side of it with a pattern of some kind on the non-recording side of the tape, and there were other tapes that we used that even at the time you could tell it was not very good, but we used a lot of recycled things at the time. I like to tell people, for instance, that our typewriters were donated and often had keys missing or letters missing. You would go to type a news story and you'd have to go back in and fill in all the E's or something like that. That's where we were when I was first here.
Really, yeah. For the first decades of KBOO, because of the shortage of money, there was a mentality of acquiring used equipment and used recording media and maintaining things with baling wire and scotch tape. We bought our first truly new from the factory transmitter in about 2002. The original transmitter in 1968 was already 30 years old. So things have changed somewhat.
Yeah, it almost be ready for Social Security. Yeah. This is going to be for both of you, and sort of a reflective kind of question. You know, in the going on 4.5 years that I've been involved with KBOO, I have run into people who have been here for 20, 30, 40 years. What causes that? What's going on that causes people to say, I want to be a part of this thing and they're still here after all these years?
That's an interesting question, Dan. And probably there are different opinions on that. I think some of it is people who really like what they do here. I mean, they really like it. They really like doing it. So that's one reason. Maybe they get something from what they do here that they can't get anywhere else. You know, especially if you're able to put out your particular viewpoint on something in a broadcast way, not in a written way, that might be very, very appealing to people. Also, the fact that it's in many ways a like-minded community, although it is pretty diverse, there, KBOO is a place where you can come if you are sort of outside the mainstream and feel pretty comfortable, I think, in general. There are probably exceptions to that. And,
right.
But those are some reasons I would give.
Bruce?
As I said before, I watched TV news and have listened to the news and read a newspaper for a long time. When I was younger, I think the quality of news reporting was averaged better in the U.S. than it does now. I didn't even know it. It had shortcomings then. Now, I wouldn't hear half these stories, and listeners wouldn't hear many of the genres of music. They just aren't there in broadcasting, and we feel the need. Some listeners may not know that KBOO was founded to put on the air something that was going to disappear from the airwaves in Portland. That was classical music. In 1964, there was a commercial classical station which was dropping the format, and one person in particular, just a listener, wrote a letter to the newspaper saying, "I can't live in a city without classical music. If anyone agrees with me, here's my name and address." And that's how it started. By the time it went on the air in 68, others had already joined in, jazz lovers and political activists. It was the 60s, after all. We still put on the air what is not available otherwise. Not classical anymore, because the station found, through our example, that it's possible to make a go of it. Same thing with jazz. But so many stories are not covered elsewhere. I'm happy to be a part of an operation that informs people. And I'll say, unlike some of my colleagues here, I do not tell the listeners what to think when I do an interview, which is the only public affairs I do now. I just have to hope and believe in people and their brains. If they get the right information, they'll probably come to the right conclusions. I don't think the average American is getting enough information anymore.
I was just thinking that another reason I would add that I think people stay around for so long is that they become really passionate about the radio station. I think we've seen that many times, that they become really invested in what the station represents, and they want that to continue. And I think that's one of the reasons that people stay around so much.
That has happened to me. Our collaborative decision making is messy, and I've gotten frustrated at times. But on the other hand, we've stuck to our principles. I can't imagine how else KBOO would be run. So that's something that has caused me to stay here. I don't know how someone can stay in the paid staff when they're paid so low, Kathleen, and work so many hours. So your answer is going to have to be different from mine to this question.
Oh, so if you're talking about me personally, it's because the job is just so interesting. I mean, before I came to KBOO, I had a lot of not so interesting jobs over time. And I know the importance of working in an interesting job and in a job where you believe in what you're doing, and how rare both those things can be. And that's basically why I've been here.
And I think because I've spent a number of years around radio stations, you develop a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
And until you understand what it means to have a passion for something, you can never really put your finger on it. I know you were going to try to say something, Bruce.
Yeah, more about the interesting part, the people who have come through here, some of whom we have on tape, but some not. I remember once Howard Lyman, the Mad Cowboy, if folks remember an activist in cattle raising and healthy food issues in the late 90s and early 2000s. Howard Lyman passed Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers in the hallway. Nowhere else in Portland is that going to happen.
No.
And I've interviewed people who I never would have met or learned about anywhere else or listening to other radio or watching TV or anywhere.
And one other side note to that, too, is there have been a number of people through the years who have been a part of KBOO and have gone on to, you know, even bigger and better things. You know, I don't know what could be better than KBOO, but, you know, a step up in their careers. But now, one of the interesting things that I've learned about working with Jenka doing these tune-in, turn-on programs. And I learned it at the very beginning. The first interview that I did back in February, I think it was with Bob Bailey, who was president of the board of directors, and, you know, he was involved in helping find this location that we're currently in. But Bob told me about a number of other people that I had absolutely no idea what function they played with KBOO or the role they played. And then I followed that up with an interview with Sheila Rubin. Mm-hmm. And Sheila Rubin did the same thing. She started talking about people that she worked with during her time here, not only in the news department, but as a volunteer and all of those other areas. And she started running names off, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm trying to write all of this stuff down because as far as I'm concerned, they all have a single connection. And so my question for both of you, in the time that you've been here and you've known a number of people, who have you worked with that has really left a marked impression on you? That you were really glad that you had a chance to get to know?
Well, that's a lot of people. I mean, if we're going back in history a little bit, which I think maybe you're implying that it wouldn't be somebody from the contemporary sphere. You know, the reason that I have this job is probably due to a woman named Jack, who took the name Jack later in her time here at KBOO. She was formerly known as Linda Shirley, and she was very encouraging to me. And I would never have thought that I could do the kind of work that being a news director or a public affairs director involves, that I could speak on a microphone, that I could speak publicly. Those were all things that were nurtured in some way by Jack. She was also a taskmaster in her way. And a very unique individual, but I owe her a lot as far as that goes. So she's the first person that comes to mind. There are many, many. Maybe Bruce wants to give somebody's name right now.
Well, just one, because there have been so many, and we do our training one-on-one, so I've gotten to know a lot of people. I mean, we have formal training classes too, but not so much when I started, pretty much one-on-one. This is a dangerous question to answer, Dan. And so I'm just going to cop out and say that Kathleen Stevenson is my goddess.
Bruce. Because I'm sitting so close to him right now.
And since it's not TV, it's radio, I want to report that Kathleen is blessed.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Huh? Well, no, I didn't mean to put either of you on the spot, but, you know, I can think of people that I knew in radio through the years that really left a lasting impact on me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, some of them are gone, they're dead, right. They've moved on to other things, but that memory lingers nonetheless.
Right, yeah. There are many, many people. And I had mentioned my predecessor, Ross Reynolds, who, you know, I learned a lot from him. I could not, when I first started, I could not begin to compare with the kind of work that he had been doing here at that time. So he was very important.
Now, you did some interviews back when the station was celebrating its 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And were you thinking forward at all at that point about, you know, what's going to happen in another 20 years or 30 years? Or was this just a reflective period of what had happened during the first 25 years?
For me, I think I was just trying to get some history that I didn't know and out there. And so I wanted to interview people who had some knowledge of what went before. And no, I wasn't thinking 20 years ahead. In fact, I remember the job interview that I had for the job, and they asked me how long I thought I might stay. And I said, well, I think maybe 2 years. So it's kind of crazy that I've been here this long, and I don't know that I had much awareness of thinking more to the future. Probably Bruce has more of that with being the archivist.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So we need to dig into Bruce's little.
I'm going to deny that. I think I live more in the present. My goal is to inform people. I don't work on the music side of things here, although even there, the music we play is partly to entertain, but partly to let people know that there's other types of music than what they hear mostly. I don't think about the future. Oh, I do a little bit, you know, when I'm thinking behind the scenes. And frankly, at this time, my concern is about something that I've never heard in a discussion at KBOO, the word competition. We have been able to get away from classical and jazz, as I mentioned before, because other stations have seen from our example that they could cover those areas. But we've always had something like competition from Oregon Public Broadcasting, although they approach some of the same topics differently. They don't do music anymore, but still some of the same topics. But in recent times, as we sit here today, low-power FM stations and internet stations have begun in Portland, and one other station that will be on the air soon on FM is specializing in local bands, local music, something we've led the way on for a long time. We can make this into a good thing that they're there too, but right now I'm a little worried, not very, but a little worried. We've never been good at putting out our message beyond those who find us. And another word I had not heard until very recently at a development committee meeting was branding. Now, some listeners are wincing. It's a word that's now in the language. But when you have three different bumper stickers going at the same time and your website looks like one thing and your ads look like something else, you don't have to be called slick and professional to get your act together in those respects. There are loads of people in our listening area who should know about KBOO and still don't. And sometimes we forget that.
How do you think we project that message?
How do we, or how should we?
How should we?
How should we? We need to spend a little money on advertising, frankly, and alliances with some of the same organizations, activist organizations, whose issues we have covered, whose people we've interviewed and so on. Their members and their listeners or readers are our potential listeners to KBOO and members and supporters of the organization. And so the contacts are there. It doesn't necessarily cost that much money to do all of this. We have friends around in Portland.
If you're talking about branding, I think it gets complicated with KBOO because our brand, on the larger scale, looking at the larger picture, our brand is eclectic, you know. So it's hard to focus in on one particular area and successfully give an image of the organization.
Especially if you think you're going to try to attract some of the mainstream audience out there, you know. There are some progressive people that are a part of the mainstream audience. Mm-hmm. So, Bruce?
Certainly. Being eclectic is a challenge and an opportunity. Most radio stations have one format. They play one type of music, or they're all news, or all sports, or all talk, or something. With our self-appointed goal of putting on the radio what's not on the radio, well, there are a lot of things that are not on the radio in Portland. And it causes us to be a different radio station every hour or two. And when you do that, you have your entire audience switch off and you have to start building a whole new audience every hour on the hour or every couple of hours. That is a challenge that we've caused for ourselves. I'm not saying we should just choose one group to serve and drop all the others, but it's a challenge we need to recognize and work at improving on.
It's a real challenge. I mean, yeah. Not to work on your word, but it, I think that's where it lies. I think that's where it really lies. Okay, this is kind of like the stock question that I've asked many people that I've interviewed over this last year. Are you happy about the decision that you made to make KBOO your career? And I say career in a very... You're glad you did what you did?
Me? Yeah. I'm very glad. I'm thankful. I appreciate what KBOO has given me, which is something I don't think I would have gotten. There's no way I would have gotten it in other situations that might have been available to me. I mean, it's been incredible. The people that I've met, and the people just that I work with, the volunteers that I work with, it's just been an incredible experience to be involved here and interacting with the people all day long.
Well, I've got to say, I'm awfully glad that you're here.
Well, thank you, Dan.
I really mean that. Yeah. Bruce, how about you? Are you happy you did what you did?
Sure I am. It's not a career for me. It's not my paying job. And actually, at my age and with my skills, I couldn't work anywhere else, probably. This is as a volunteer, and I want to say this to anyone listening who would consider being a volunteer or maybe hasn't considered it yet. You can learn some skills here. I didn't know how to interview people. It's quite challenging, but I have learned and I'm still learning. The mechanics of editing tape and so on. KBOO teaches, and even though it's not in our mission statement really, that is one of the most important things we do here. I enjoy teaching skills. We recently had an open house, and I enjoyed giving tours and telling people about our successes. This place is a middle-aged organization, activist organization, nonprofit, whatever, that has accomplished an awful lot and can still accomplish the same. And that I feel good about that, and I feel good being involved.
Well, I know I've talked to people from around the country that may have never been to Portland, but they've heard of KBOO. They know the work that KBOO does. They know the thing that KBOO has accomplished over the years. So that says a lot for our message on a broader scale and scheme. Now, without trying to raise any kind of political controversy.
Why not?
We've got this a message of our mission statement, and we adhere very closely to that mission statement. Do you think that perhaps we need to sometimes go back and take a look at that mission statement and do some tweaking? Or in terms of our programming and the way we operate as a radio station?
I don't think it hurts to look at it and examine it and see if you're doing what it's saying you should be doing and whether it fits, et cetera, every so often. I personally have found the mission statement quite helpful in my own job. When I came here, the mission statement was somewhat different, and Alan Bailey is the one who actually crafted the mission statement that we have. It was a little looser, and it was about KBOO covering unpopular points of view, but it didn't list the kind of things that we would that are part of our mission statement: environmentalism, social justice, and other aspects of what guides me in the kind of programming that we put out there. I find that very helpful. I find that, in a sense, more helpful than unpopular points of view, which would make us more like a sort of community-oriented media that the video media, which the name escapes me right now, but video media where everybody, regardless of their political orientation, perhaps a skinhead program can be on, or a right-wing kind of program can be on. That, in our older mission, that's what we seem to be saying, but we didn't really do that. And so to make that explicit in our mission statement was very helpful for me.
Okay. Yeah, we're not public access radio. When I came here in 91, Alan Bailey, former station manager's revision of the mission statement was already in place. And for public affairs programming, he lists 8 specific areas that we will concern ourselves with: peace, justice, social change, environment, and so on. And when I was first editing the news, I used that list to help me choose which stories from the Associated Press that we would work on each day. And it helped me not waste folks' time on stories that were not important to our mission, either because you could get them elsewhere or because it just didn't improve the listener's life or mind or whatever. I consider our mission statement, our charter, pretty much every day I'll think, what does the KBOO mission statement say about even the next question in an interview that I'm doing? The fact that that statement has stood the test of time over 20 years now, if it requires any tweaking, it's just a bit. I'm quite happy with it, frankly.
Good, good. And my question didn't come from the challenge to change the mission statement, but I wanted to get the kind of response that both of you shared. And I think it's important. And I find myself from time to time when I walk in the station, I stop and I reread that mission statement because, like so many other people, we need to be reminded, you know.
Yeah, I want to follow up on Kathleen's example of unpopular views. Sometimes views are unpopular, deservedly so. And we're all human beings here with minds, and we need to use our judgment on whether an opinion, a view on an issue is unpopular because those in power won't let it be said, or maybe even because they recognize that actually it's a better idea, or because it's off the wall and doesn't deserve to be listened to. Everybody does this in their lives every day, whether it's conversation or whether it's news media.
Okay. Got a few minutes left here, and you guys have been great. I have a question that I'd like to get responses from both of you on. And I know, Bruce, that you mentioned that you don't look into the future that much, but I really would like to hear what you have to say about where you think KBOO will be in, say, another 10 years.
10 years is not that long a time when we've been on the air for 45 and the organization is now 49 years old. And when you get to be, well, actually the age of all of us in this room right now, 10 years is not that long. I could tell you about my dreams for KBOO, which probably...
Sure.
Because I don't think we'll change that much, and I hope we won't change that much either in the way we do things or what we do, what our content is. But when we win the lottery, I would like to see us with a satellite or internet network that, like CNN, that is providing news left of center, but complete also, news to anyone in the world, with local content divided up. I mean, like the networks, only bigger and better. Daily newspaper nationwide. Monthly magazine. We would, of course, be in a LEED platinum green skyscraper in downtown Portland.
On top of the U.S. Bank Tower. Huh?
And we'd have an auditorium where our live bands could have a studio audience.
Yeah.
And on and on. And we could afford training people, not just the few who we're proud of who have gone on to radio and journalism careers, but something more formal. And each reporter would have a technician with them as they go out in the field, and it would be radio and TV, and as I say, print also. That's my dream.
And you could get it on your iPad, too, or iPod. Yeah.
Any of those things that
any
I don't understand.
Any of the devices, yeah. How about you, Kathleen?
Well, if we're speaking about dreams, that's the, many of the things Bruce said sounded good. I guess trying to look at what's happening out in the world and how we might find our place in the changes that are happening with the web and what's available for people that's been actually mentioned before during the interview, I would hope that KBOO finds I think KBOO has elements that can make it very very much a bad word to use, but very much a player in that world. I think one of the things you hear all the time about the world of people using the internet to get their news and get their information and their entertainment is this issue of engagement. And I think KBOO has the ability to use that issue in a positive way. To, you know, our talk shows are a form of engagement. And so that kind of interaction between the listener and the radio station, I think, needs to be developed more and could be developed more and made into an element that will help us in the future. And various aspects of what we do are things that are now being touted as the new way. Citizen reporters, for instance, is something that you see a lot in the discussion of what happens with the internet, and that's something that KBOO's been doing for a long time. So I think finding our way in this world and trying to find the things that make us really good and fitting them into the world that we're going into is our challenge. But I think we can do that.
Bruce?
Dan, one technological change that's maybe a little more realistic in 10 years or someday than the dream I was talking about was a separation of the music from the public affairs. Either with two FM frequencies or two streams or something like that. And we have some of the elements, technical elements in place already. So maybe that will happen. It would cost some money that we don't have yet, but it's a possibility.
Well, it's all achievable, and I think you've just really